Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back, my friend, to another episode of Life After Corporate. And if you're new to our show, welcome home. It's here you get no BS advice about what it truly takes to make the leap from corporate leader to being your own CEO and replacing that paycheck you just walked away from with strategies and tactics that will help you grow beyond that salary into a business where you can grow and thrive. And today I am super excited to be joined by Jessica Courthouse, founder and CEO of So House, an educational platform and digital membership community that provides marketing and branding and educational resources to help early stage female founders grow and market their businesses. And we're going to talk about building demand here today, women, building demand before supply, which is the opposite of if you build it, will they come? So welcome, Jessica.
Hi, Deborah. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today because in many ways, we're just like sisters from another mister.
Same.
Yeah. We met at the She Leads conference last year, which is the conference that's run by Adrienne Garland, a mutual friend. Mm-hmm. And we had that immediate connection based on what it really takes to succeed as a new business owner. Mm-hmm. And before we open it up to drive into demand today, because I think this is going to be such a juicy conversation because it's the opposite of what most new entrepreneurs do. I know that you, like me, are an accidental entrepreneur. It's not something like we dreamed about for decades, but instead it became something that we fell into later on. So tell us about your life after corporate story.
Yeah, sure. So I'll try to make it as concise as possible because it's quite a roller coaster. But accidental probably wouldn't even cover it. Really, it was more like pushed or forced off the cliff into entrepreneurship. So I was working for a global fashion brand. I was on a one-way ticket to New York City. I was in my early to mid-20s. I would say actually about mid-20s now. And I was slated to sort of move up in this company I was working for and hence was going to be my move to New York. And a little birdie up in corporate told me that the position that I was vetting for was going to be eliminated across the organization. Like nationwide, they just got rid of the role, which certainly happens in corporate, right? And I was really devastated. I mean, I had spent years and years putting one stepping stone in front of the other on this very direct, very linear career path because that's what I thought I wanted, thought I needed, and my job was eliminated that Friday, basically. My now husband, we were dating at the time and we were living together. And I went home and I drowned my sorrows in wine and pasta about how sad I was that my dream job was eliminated. And my husband and I just, you know, did a lot of soul searching over that weekend. And we just talked a lot about what we saw out of life and, you know, what we really wanted. And he had a very deep technical background. I, of course, had marketing and branding and public relations background. And so we thought, why don't we just start our own agency? You're looking to do good work. I'm looking to do good work. We're both in this place of pivot and launching into our next stage. Let's just do it and see what happens. And by Monday morning, we were in business. We had up our first very crappy website and created our business card. And that was it. And I've been an entrepreneur ever since. And that was about 8 years ago now.
You know, and that's the way to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, too many people spend so much time and so much money on getting the website perfect and branding and all mm-hmm. the things that don't really matter when you first start out. And that's a great lead-in for our conversation today, because instead of spending a lot of time and a lot of money perfecting your website, getting the perfect, most, the prettiest brand in place, a really gorgeous logo and mm-hmm. all of that, what I call like sharpening your pencils, because it doesn't really matter. It's not building your business mission. It's not moving that mission forward. What do you mean when you say creating demand before you create supply? Clue us in into what that means.
Yeah. So, you know, prior to, you know, my journey into entrepreneurship, I'd been working in marketing communications for a while, but not particularly in brand strategy. That sort of morphed over time after we, you know, launched our agency that weekend. We launched a boutique branding and design agency, and then it sort of morphed over the course of 4.5 years. And we got to work with some really great global brands, and we just bootstrapped the entire thing. We had no idea what we were doing. We had no business running a company. But in that process is where I learned, you know, you said it earlier, there's oftentimes this false narrative that we play in our heads, which is that, you know, we build this beautiful solution, this thing in our minds that to us sounds like a wonderful idea. And one of the hardest pills that I had to swallow and learn and have had to continue to teach as I grow in my career is that just because you think it's a good idea doesn't mean you have a buyer for that idea. And then on top of that, if you do have a buyer, that doesn't mean that that buyer will pay the price that you have said it's worth. So by creating demand before you produce supply, you go through these series of pre-launch steps. And oftentimes those are the things that founders, and particularly women, we get caught up on, because as you said it before, we want our logos to be absolutely perfect. We want everything to just be exactly as it should be. And by doing that, we end up pigeonholing our businesses in the very, very early stages into an area that it's really hard to get out of. So I'm kind of giving you a long answer to this question.
No, but it's true. And I think the setup is really important, because mm-hmm. the reason why I started the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs is when I first made the leap, and we made the leap at the same time too, it was about 8 years ago. And I started looking around as I was, you know, building my business, learning things, and being with other women entrepreneurs who are also launching their businesses. Most of those women never got off the ground mm-hmm. because they weren't selling anything anyone wanted to buy. Mm-hmm. And so I think this conversation is so critical and so important, because it happens so often. I mean, the number one reason for business failure is no market need. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that, it was like, that is crazy, because yes. what happens is it has such a negative impact on your self-esteem. You know, you have all this steam built up, this energy and enthusiasm about making an impact with your work and solving a problem, and so much emotional energy and ego wrapped up in it, only to be let down when no one wants to buy what you're selling. So how do we avoid that?
Yeah, certainly. So there's a lot of different, you know, practical applications of things that I like to use. I know that you're aware of the lean practitioners and lean startups. So utilizing lean startup methodologies has been critical for me, especially in the early days and working with, you know, the brands I've worked with over time. But it's really about, if you have an idea, right? So lean startup teaches us that you have a leap of faith assumption. It's basically your best guess. Right? It's your educated guess. We're following the scientific experiment here. We're going back to whatever it is, second grade science class, right? You have a best guess based off of your background, your internal knowledge, what you know. You know, this is a solution that I think is needed and I think is valuable. And what happens is most early stage founders, or those who are new to entrepreneurship, they just jump right into creating the solution. When instead, what we should do is pause and think about all the different potential buyers for that solution. Which buyer is your ideal buyer, right? Ideal customer, ideal avatar. These are all interchangeable terms, right? So who is that perfect, ideal customer. And there's something that I love to follow, which is, it's a scientific model called the adoption curve. And it's basically, if you can visualize a bell curve, those at the beginning of your bell curve are basically called your early adopters, right? And so what ends up happening is most small business owners or early founders, they don't know who to target and they don't know where they fit in the bell curve. And so most founders, they try to be everything to all people at the very beginning of their business, and they end up diluting their brand, diluting their messaging because they're trying to cast their nets way too wide. And it feels really scary and very counterintuitive, but the best thing you can do in the early stages when you're first leaping into entrepreneurship is to zone in as much as you can on that ideal customer and really keep it really tight as possible, and develop your brand within that small niche first. And then as you grow, as your business changes, as you end up creating traction and, you know, creating a true business model that can be applied at scale, then you can start to think about how do you branch off into the other parts of the bell curve, which are those larger target markets.
Yes, yes, yes. And if you're listening, if you're listening to this, and if we were to ask you, who is your ideal buyer or who is your ideal client? And your answer starts with anyone who, then you need to listen to Jessica.
It's not specific enough.
It's not specific enough. Yes. You can't cast a wide net, you know? And in fact, there's a lot of talk about niching down. And so how do you find that ideal market, right? Is there a place where the niche is too narrow, or your definition is too narrow as opposed to too broad? How do you find that just right space?
Yeah. You know, the real answer is experimentation. I honestly wish I had, you know, a one size fits all answer to that. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of trial and error. And that's really where sort of the broader dialogue about, you know, do you have it in you to be an entrepreneur, right? Do you have it in you to get in the ring and bob and weave? Because that's when you really start. Most people think just getting the idea is like the biggest part. And that's actually the smallest thing that you end up doing as an entrepreneur. That's just the beginning of the journey, is the idea. So once you have the idea and you do decide that you want to jump and you want to start this business, right, at that point you get in the ring. And at that point, right, you start with your best guess. So everything is a guess. Everything in your business is a hypothesis until proven otherwise. So, and that's a very specific lean startup methodology. So as soon as you can think about who is my ideal buyer, let's say that, you know, it's a woman, ages, you know, blah through blah, right? She has this socioeconomic status. She lives in these areas. I mean, you could slice and dice this customer as niche as you can get it, right? So as soon as you can first do that, then you have to go out and validate if that assumption is true. So how do you do that? You go out and you find those women, if they are women, for example, right? But you go out and you find those customers. Right now with COVID, you know, giving us some logistical issues, a lot of this has to be online right now. There are Facebook groups, there are LinkedIn groups, there are meetups. I mean, it's just endless the amount of information that you can find online. It's about being brave enough to get out there and say, this is who I think my customer is. Now I need to go out there and validate or invalidate my assumptions.
And have those conversations. Okay, because it's just an idea. All you have right now is an idea. And you need to vet it, validate it. I mean, this is just good common sense. I mean, you can pay a McKinsey consultant millions of dollars to go into a corporation and do this for you. But testing out that hypothesis. You know, it was so funny as I was thinking about recording this episode earlier today, I was thinking our theme song would be The Long and Winding Road.
Yes, it would.
Because sometimes it feels that way. And you mentioned, you know, being ready to tackle this or head out on this entrepreneurial journey and being willing to live in curiosity. You know, will this work? Who is my ideal client? And it's not just a demographic. There's a psychographic. There are people who might fit this description who aren't ideal buyers and others who are. And there's a difference in their motivation or their willingness or their belief system to do business with me.
Absolutely. I mean, you couldn't have said it. You couldn't have said it better, Deborah. And something too, in those early stages, what ends up happening that I've seen with even brands, big teams I've worked with, this happens, but especially with solo founders, is we think that because maybe a strategy failed, or maybe we were off on our ideal buyer, we think that we have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? We think that our entire business is irrelevant. And then on top of that, as women, not all of us, but some of us, we have the tendency to take that as a failed attack on our ability to be an entrepreneur, right? So you're talking about the emotional roller coaster that it is to be a founder. I mean, it's just, it really is that long and twisty road. So I think that the biggest thing that I've learned and that I advocate for, you know, with our community members and with the women that I work with is it's just exactly what you said. It's experimenting, right? Trial and error, test, keep testing, keep learning in those early stages, learn as much as you can about your particular business, about your solution, about your buyer. Maybe there's a certain combination of things, right? You are not going to get it right when you jump right out the gate. It's just literally impossible. It's statistically impossible for you to get the business right. So as soon as you can accept that it's going to be trial and error, the sooner you'll be able to actually get to that core business that's going to make the most sense for you.
And there's so many moving parts, right? So if something's not working, it could be, you know, you've targeted the wrong buyer, it could be the wrong offer, it could be the wrong pricing, it could be the wrong messaging. So done is better than perfect. So how do they? What is the most important thing to do after you get laser focused on your customer and you feel like you've got a handle on what that narrower segment of the market is that you will address with your solution? So many people then start perfecting their solution. So what is your recommendation for how do you get your first offer out there?
Yeah, no, great question. So the first offer is really based on true customer pain points. And that's part of that customer exploratory dialogue we were just having. So in the process of experimenting with your customer, your ideal buyer, in that process, you should be trying to figure out what keeps them up at night, right? What do they struggle with the most? What brings them the most joy? What would change their lives? I mean, all these sort of larger existential questions. And the best thing to do is start out with, you know, what we call an MVP, which is a minimum viable product. So it's basically the quick and dirty version of the entire solution, right? There's no way that you can even develop an entire solution because you don't even know the whole story yet when you're first starting out. So if you can develop an MVP, which is for us, so go back to, you know, the time that I was let go from my dream job and we launched an agency on Monday morning. Our MVP was our very first website with our very first list of services. And it was based on our best guess. It was, okay, you have this skill set. I have this skill set. We were targeting entrepreneurs within Orlando, Florida, which is where I used to live, within the startup ecosystem. And we knew a few things about them. And so that's what we launched. And then once we were actually in market, we started learning, oh, so they have this problem too. Oh, so that problem is related to that problem. Okay, we can do that. Or there's a new solution we can carve out for that. So it's really just coming up with that MVP, the minimum easiest thing that you can make to prove demand for your actual solution before you go off and produce all the supply.
And it doesn't have to be pretty and wrapped up with a beautiful bow either.
Correct.
You can, one of the things that I did recently was when I noticed because of COVID, all the speaking engagements had been canceled. A lot of people were bringing their talks online and they weren't necessarily well informed on how to do that in a compelling way, especially they didn't know how to make offers in their talk. And I thought, wow, this is my primary lead stream. It's how I attract most of my business and I know how to do that. So I created a course called Standout Webinars and I didn't have anything in the can. I mean, I had my assistant build a page where people could sign up and I made it really clear to people when they signed up that we're going to do this together. So you're getting the benefit of a lower price point than I'll probably charge later on because I'm going to be delivering it to you live. And the good news is you get to ask me a ton of questions so that I can refine this product.
Absolutely. And I think from a branding and marketing perspective, as long as you're honest about where you are, that's the best thing that you can do, right? So the best thing is to say, listen, we're in beta, or listen, this is new, or hey, we don't have it all figured out and we would like you to test it. We would like you to be a part of our evolution. That's the best thing an early stage founder can do to get their product out there with, if they have some fear of it being perfect. And I have a very similar story that I'll make very quickly. So, you know, I was consulting for years and years post our agency, and I sort of had a new hypothesis that I wanted to empower female founders. You know, I'd work with large brands, and really working with women and working with early stage founders was my passion. So I also knew that women and founders didn't really have the capital to bring me on board as like their CMO. And honestly, I didn't want to do that anymore. I didn't want to consult one-on-one anymore. I wanted to create truly scalable products. And so I had this vision, what if I created a course? I had never created a course before in my life, upwards until a few years ago. And same similar situation as you is I created a landing page and I was like, all right, I'm going to create a beta program. It's going to be free. Some betas are not free. As I know, I don't think yours was free. Mine was free for my purposes. And I threw up a landing page and I made a very ugly ad on Canva and I promoted it on Instagram for $98 for 1 week. And it basically said, for women entrepreneurs to learn branding and marketing, come sign up for this beta. It's free. Right? Applications close on this day. And my internal number was 25. I thought, okay, if I get 25 women to sign up for this program that didn't even exist yet, then I would go off. That was my validation that this program was wanted and needed for me. And I ended up getting over 100 women signed up for this program within—
Oh my God.
Yeah, within a week. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I should go off and build this program. I had no technology. I had no modules, nothing. Like nothing. And I had already, like, that's exactly what we mean by like produce demand before you fill supply. That exactly. was my way of doing that. And same with you. That's your way of doing it, is getting those early testers to get in and buy in and say, yes, I'm interested. And then go off and do everything you need to do to make the product valuable.
And it's such a fun thing to do too. And people love to talk about themselves. And so having conversations with people about their challenges and what keeps them up at night and what have you tried already and what's working, yes. what's not, and what do you wish you had? Those are, you know, that's gold. We just gave you gold right there of the questions that you can go out and ask. But, you know, just creating something and seeing how it works. And sometimes there's a longer lead time, but I really love your approach. I know for the Launch Lab, I just took what I was coaching one-on-one and I found like I was repeating myself all the time over and over. Yeah. And I was wasting my private time, my one-on-one, my highest, my most valuable asset. And the thing I charge the most for with teaching people concepts. And if you find yourself teaching people concepts and you're teaching the same thing over and over again to each of your clients, that's a prime thing that you can strip out and package and put into an online course so that you can use your one-on-one client time of really customizing your advice to your unique client situation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So MVP, done is better than perfect.
That's right.
The easiest, most minimal thing that you can get out there and test and refine and improve. And then it's that wash, rinse, repeat, right? You have something that's an asset to your business that you've already created that you can use over and over again. Mm-hmm. So what do you do after the MVP? How do you build some real traction in your business once you've got something that's really working?
Yeah, sure. So if you're following all the right steps, right, which feels like a mountain, but in general, like we said, right, validating customer, understanding what they need, get your MVP out and about and test it, have several rounds. For me, I did 2 rounds of beta. So this program that I had just mentioned that I had over 100 women sign up for, they went through the program. I actually learned so much. I learned that it was too long. I learned that it was too difficult. Mm-hmm. I learned all kinds of things. And a part of me definitely, my ego was very bruised. I was like, oh man, like I just spent 2 months creating this program, but that ended up being fodder for what is now our membership community. So it all was sort of related. So to sort of answer your question, right? Like once I got that initial validation, then it's really, as you said, about traction. And there's just a general rule of thumb that has worked for me and that you know, this sort of a proven theory anyway, which is 50% of your time should be dedicated to continuing to learn and continuing to product develop, right? So as you launch your next product into market, whether it's B2B business or B2C business, doesn't matter. As you're in market and you're learning and you're getting more customers and you're validating, right? Continue to do that for 50% of your time. The other 50% of your time is to keep the distribution. And that's oftentimes where founders lose priority. Is it's so much easier for us to just product develop ourselves to death, basically, to perfection. Mm-hmm. And then we forget, oh yeah, we're supposed to be actually marketing this product. So if you can just split your time 50-50 in a perfect world, right? 50% mm-hmm. dedicated to traction efforts, 50% dedicated to continual product development, you'll be moving, in, these two disciplines will be moving in parallel. And then in terms of how to actually develop traction, all of that, of course, is relative to the specific business. But in general, what I will say is that most early stage female founders think that they have to be on all platforms, right? They have to be on Facebook and Twitter and mm-hmm. Instagram and Pinterest and doing webinars and if you go back to what we talked about before, which is iterate, learn, build, measure, learn, right? Wash, rinse, repeat. Start mm-hmm. with one traction platform, whatever that is, right? So for me, it was webinars. I know that you're like the queen of webinars, Deborah. You're going to be teaching a class for us, for our community in a couple months.
I can't wait.
Yes, what I'm super excited about. So, you know, for example, if your particular buyer, if their ideal customer journey is they see an ad or whatever, they see a piece of creative that drives them to a webinar that is free, that you can then convert them to your paid product, right? What does that journey look like loosely? And I know that this could get very complicated for a lot of early founders, but in general, we have to create a journey to lead our customers to buy, right? And so if you can figure out what that journey is when you're first starting out, then you can learn how to optimize that journey, how to minimize the time they spend on that journey, how to automate that journey. So that's really where the traction piece comes in. And that's an entirely other arm of experimentation as well, because what specific traction strategy works for you in year one is going to morph and change in year 2, 3, 4, 5 and onward, right?
Yeah, that's like the 201 conversation, and this mm-hmm. is the 101 conversation. But it's so funny that you said the journey, because I was thinking as you were talking about the client journey, and there's two client journeys. There's the journey of the ideal buyer before they get to you. So that's mm-hmm. the ideal buyer journey, and then they convert and they become a client. And then that's the client journey. You know, mm-hmm. where do they start, and then where do they need to go next? So I think the whole product development piece of it is once you have honed in and you know who your ideal client is and you know who they are, because those are the people that when you wake up in the morning and you look at your calendar and you see that they're there, you go, oh yes, mm-hmm. I get to work with her today. And so once you have those ideal clients and you're delivering real value through the offerings that you have, just understanding, well, what does she need next? What's her next step on that journey? Mm-hmm. And that's what dictates for me anyway. You know, what do I focus on developing? You know, so in the launch yeah. lab, and you and I do similar things mm-hmm. In different ways, which is, you know, how do you find out who your ideal client is? What do you offer? How do you package it, price it, and message it? And then, you know, so the next thing is, well, then you have to attract more of them. And so then it's amplifying your marketing, which is what you're saying is distribution. How do you amplify your marketing to really attract more of your ideal customers? So what advice do you give people for how to amplify their marketing?
Yeah. So the first thing is to pick a couple of channels that, again, as I said before, everything in your business is a hypothesis until proven otherwise. And that's marketing too. So pick the channels that you think are going to make the most sense for you. And how you pick those channels are based on so much information. I mean, you could do outside research. You talked about, you know, using a giant consulting company earlier. You know, of course, most founders don't have that, but that research exists, right? Mm-hmm. So couple it online, do some market research, find out, are there other people in your space who are doing what you're doing? That's one of my favorite things to advise mm-hmm. founders to do, is who is in your space with a similar offer that you are. And I never consider people true competitors, right? Like, it's very, very rare that anyone is going to launch something into market that some form of that doesn't already exist. That's a good thing, right? So get in touch with those founders, see what they're doing. What strategies are they using? Sign up for their email letters. Like, you know, really try to pick through those early strategies that are going to cost you. It's your MVP strategy. It's going to cost you the minimal amount of effort and give you the most amount of return.
It's easy proof.
Yeah.
Easy proofs. And yeah, we're not saying that you should sound like your competitor or offer the same thing as your competitor. Yes. But what you're doing is finding proof. And if you can find those channels where people are hanging out and you can lurk around there. So it's not your job at this point to be an expert mm-hmm. and start sharing a lot of messages, but it's about being a really good listener mm-hmm. and understanding what are some of the patterns that I'm seeing over and over again? What are the words that people are using? How do I can connect with people in a real and meaningful way?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if there's someone who's come before you, that's one of the best things. That's one of the best resources that's available to you as a founder, is you don't have to recreate the wheel. You can copy a playbook and make it uniquely yours that someone mm-hmm. else has done based on what you know about your customer. And if you don't mind, Deborah, I'd love to go back to something you said before, because I think it's really important. You had mentioned that if you're having trouble coming up with your ideal customer, it's that customer that when you see on your calendar, you go, like your heart lights up. I think that is so important, because especially if you're in a service-based business, because so many times we think, right, we live in the real world, we have to pay electricity, we have to pay our bills. Okay, that's fine. And definitely in the early stages of my business, I took on clients that were not ideal clients to, you know, pay our team. And, you know, those things happen, right? But I think that's really important, is if you are going to take the leap into entrepreneurship, right? This is one of the hardest journeys, I think, professionally, at least from where I stand, that anyone can do. It's one of the most rewarding and also one of the most challenging. So you might as well be serving people that you love to serve, right? And really mm-hmm. fulfilling on a mission that you love and that you deeply care about.
Yes, so true. And you know, so just the other day, I wrote down a list of all my favorite clients and just looking at, well, what do they have in common? Where did they come from? How did I meet them? What was it about them that made them so ideal? And how did they behave? How did they enjoy the Launch Lab? What did they do? And just those types of questions and reflections, and also metrics, you know, understanding where people came from, you know, how did they get to find you? What are the things that you've done to build demand that actually work? Mm-hmm. You know, so on the wash, rinse, repeat, you know, if I've got a webinar where 50% of the people who go to that page sign up for that webinar, which is a good statistic
Incredible.
For me,
yeah,
then that's one that I want to use over and over again. You know, mm-hmm. I might tweak it here and there. I might offer something different, but it's one of those things in my portfolio, one of the assets in my business that I can reuse.
Yeah.
So Jessica, I'm really curious about your community. Can you tell us a little bit more about it? And can you share with our listeners how they can become a part of the SoHouse community if that's what they'd like to do?
Yeah, sure. So it's interesting. Our community actually came from me listening to my customers. So if you remember, I had mentioned that I did that beta program where I had over 100 women sign up. This mm-hmm. was back in mid-2018, I believe. And so that was my product. That was my one product for like almost 2 years. And I continued to sell that product, learn, iterate. And then what ended up happening is I had women go through this course, this program, and they would say, Jessica, that was so good. Oh my God, now what? And I was like,
yes, that's what happens. They say, now what? What's next? What do you have for me?
And I was like, nothing. I mean, I didn't have anything for them, right? Because I mean, I'm building it as we go. Like I actually just read a quote the other day. Here it is. I have it written down right next to me. Entrepreneurship is throwing yourself off a cliff and assembling the plane on the way down. Mm-hmm. That was exactly what happened. And I thought, okay, I don't have a next step for these women. Like, what can that be? And then through just internal dialogue and what I wanted and the company I wanted to build, that's how our community actually ended up happening. Is I learned through my online programs that women wanted consistent, smaller bite-sized chunks to marketing and branding, right? They didn't want to have to take these giant leaps or do these very enormous deliverables. They wanted really tiny bite-sized chunks and steps. And I was like, that's easy. I can do that. And so that's how our community came to be. And our MVP community was just access to a Slack channel and a few courses. And that was early this year. And now we've grown and iterated so much from them. So the community is really truly an educational community that really deep dives into helping early stage founders with the branding and marketing aspects of their business. And there's amazing communities out there that exist that address the broader lifestyle of female entrepreneurship. And those are great. And I'm members of a lot of them. But what I don't see is a community that really exclusively focuses on this problem. And marketing and branding is actually the number two problem for early stage female founders. Did you know that? The number one problem is access to capital. Yeah. The number one problem is access to capital. And marketing and branding is number two.
Yeah, it makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. So yep. Makes sense. So I am so excited to share that. Give us a URL. How did they sign up?
Yeah, what do we do next? Yeah, so our community, we're actually going to be changing our price structure here in a little bit. But for right now, probably by the time this airs, our community is super affordable. I mean, it's $29 a month right now, which is just unbelievably affordable. Yeah, which is why a lot of different reasons we're going to be raising our prices here pretty soon. But the best members that I actually find that resonate the most with the community and their brands and end up growing much faster and better than the other community members are those that end up joining for the annual membership. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if there's just time is on their side. I'm not sure. But in our annual membership is $295. So again, very affordable for the access to courses. We have a new course that goes live every single month. We produce bi-weekly workshops that are all recorded and uploaded into the resource library, which you are going to be hosting one for us, which I'm so excited about.
I'm excited too.
Yep. And then we have our private Slack channel where all of our community members can support each other and I can be there as well. And then we also have a third section of our community, which is called the Insider Tools, Guides, and Templates. And these are, you know, these are workbooks. These are customizable content calendars. This is a brand guideline template. I mean, these are our community. Wow. Yeah, it's really intended to give early stage female founders access to specific activities and deliverables that they can actually use to brand and market their business. It's a little bit of theory and a lot of application. So they can go to the website, solace.com. Anyone can get in touch with me on social and go ahead and join. And we have a special coupon code for your listeners that we can share maybe later.
Yeah, we'll put everything in show notes. But first of all, sohouse.com. So they spell it right. Can you give us the URL and spell it out?
Sure. So my last name is Courthouse, which is my last name is Dutch. And so Sohouse is a part of my last name. It's S as in Sam, O-H-U-I-S as in Sam.
And sohouse.com.
Yeah, sohouse.com.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And coupon code for Life After Corporate?
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is Deborah and I wanted to support this community. So we created a 10% off for the annual membership. So the annual membership automatically saves 15% over the year. So this is an additional 10% on top of that, which is awesome. And it's going to be LAC20. So Life After Corporate 20.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And if people want to follow you on social, what primary channel should they tune in on?
Yeah. So I'm really big on Instagram. Instagram is my channel of choice.
That's your jam. Instagram is your jam.
Instagram's the jam. Yeah. It's Jessica_Courthouse. You can find me on the gram. And then also our company, Sohouse Inc. is on Instagram as well.
Jessica, this has been so much fun. I've enjoyed knowing you, connecting with you, collaborating with you, and it's so exciting. And I know the level of quality that you deliver. So that's why I'm so wowed, why I kept saying wow, wow, wow on what you've developed in this community, because you are one of the high quality producers of content out there for early stage female founders. So I highly encourage everyone to jump in, check it out, and join us over there. And I'll be doing the webinar the mm-hmm. How to Create Webinars That Inform, Engage, and Convert in August. I think it's August 6th. So come on over. It's going to be great fun. And Jessica, I don't even want to say goodbye. I'm like elongating this goodbye because it's been so much fun. But thank you. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Yeah.
And we will see you next time on Life After Corporate. See you real soon. Bye for now. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.